Welcome to Revitalize and Replant with Mark Clifton, where we equip pastors to take their churches from declining to thriving by pointing them to a new future and a new hope. Join us weekly for encouragement and practical advice in your pastoring journey. This is another special edition of Revitalize and Replant with Mark Clifton, because we have a special guest today that I'm delighted to introduce to you. Mark's going to have a good time talking to him. Me being I am a Texas boy.
It's true.
I was born in Fort Worth when my parents were in seminary down there. And so it's a pleasure to introduce to you Dr. Nathan Lorick, who is currently the executive director for the Southern Baptist of Texas Convention. And he has served on the Southern Baptist Convention nominating committee. He's been a trustee for the International Mission Board. And he's been on lots of secular media, such as Fox and Friends, Glenn Beck Radio, American Family Radio, Tony Perkins Live, lots of others, because of his stand on religious liberty. And so we're pleased to have him here. By the way, he and his wife live in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. They have four children. And he's one of those guys, because he is from Texas, of course. He likes hunting. It's not hunting. It's hunting.
That's right.
And reading. He's a runner, which Mark and I just really got excited about.
We did. We have that in common.
So Dr. Nathan Lorick, welcome. And Mark, say hello.
Man, I'm so glad you're with us. I really am. Been looking forward to this. Man, follow what you've done in your ministry. You had a great impact, made a great wake wherever you've been. I also enjoy following you on Facebook and all your family and everything you do there. So thanks for being with us, man. I appreciate it very much. I really do.
Oh, man, I'm honored you guys would ask and humbled at your statements. And that's mutual feeling. And to see all that God has used you in, Mark, and the replanting world. And as you know, I was in Colorado for a season with Mark Halleck, being in one of our churches in our network. And so, I've got to kind of see up close and personal the influence that you've had in his life, and that continues to ripple out across the SBC and beyond. So, man, it really is an honor to be with you.
Well, I appreciate it. You bumped Halleck. We if we can't find any really good guests, then we have Halleck.
That's so right. Well, best encourager I've ever met in my life.
Isn't he though? And he'll hug the daylights out of you too.
Yes, he will.
Hey, we're going to go through this really quickly. As a pastor and as a leader of pastors, just off the top of your head, and you did not receive these questions ahead of time, but as a pastor and a leader of pastors, what are two or three key elements you consider that are just imperative for a healthy church? Talking about your church, if you're going to be a pastor and your church is going to be on a pathway to health, and you know, we could sit here and talk all day about all the churches that are struggling and dying. We know that, but let's talk about how they can get healthy. So what are two or three key elements you would consider to be an imperative for church health as a pastor leading that church?
Yeah, you know, I've pastored two churches. One was my first church was out in the country, had 33 people that voted on me, and I thought it was the Taj Mahal, and I was Billy Graham, and you weren't going to convince me otherwise. And the next one was in a small town in East Texas, and spent 5 years there. God did some great things, and just love the local church, love pastors, want to be the greatest encourager. I would say the top, you know, two or three things. First of all, you got to have a healthy pastor, right? I mean, that's significant that a pastor is walking with the Lord daily outside of a sermon prep time. My mentor, who's gone to be with the Lord, Rod Masteller, one of the guys that's really poured into my life, used to say, it's not enough to get in the word. You have to get the word in you. Mm. And, you know, when you're studying for sermons, you're getting in the word. But man, you've got to have that time to get healthy and have the word get in you, and make sure that all those checks and balances are in place, walking intimately with the Lord, because I do believe a church will only be as healthy as the pastor is in his walk with the Lord. A second thing I'd say is you need a pastor who learns to love the people, and then they'll let him lead them. So I tell pastors all the time, if you love them, they'll let you lead them. You can't come in just wanting to cast this massive vision and bring them to a place they're not ready to go to if they don't know that you love them. And so I tell pastors all the time, man, go in and just love people as God begins to give you the vision for revitalizing this church or to grow this church. Man, just love the people and they'll follow you. And I would say third for sure is a praying church. One of the big emphases that we make at the SBTC and will be a massive part of as we're going to begin unrolling some of the future vision the Lord's begin to put in our heart for the next season of the SBTC's ministry, prayer is going to be a foundational element. I've taken two trips even now of pastors, one from Colorado, one from Texas here to visit with Jim Cimbala for 2 or 3 days and just understand what it looks like to develop a church in the culture of prayer. We're doing prayer retreats now across Texas that have been phenomenal, where we're giving pastors practical tools, but also carving out some time during those retreats to where they have about 3 or 4 hours in a room by themselves to get on their face before the Lord and man, just giving some practical helps. And so I would say a healthy pastor, pastor walking with the Lord and loves the people and leads the people, and then a pastor or a church that has and cultivates a culture of prayer, for sure.
Those are really, really good. I mean, every one of them spot on for every reason you suggested. I don't think guys fully understand. They get one shot at making a first impression on every member of that church. And if the first impression, it's all about me and my strategy and what I'm going to do, that's one thing. But if the first impression is, man, this pastor loves me, he wants to know about me, that's a whole different way of looking at it. It really is.
That's right.
So what's working well in Texas as you lead churches toward a new future and a new hope? And I know you've got some great strategies for revitalization. And tell us what's working well. I love what you said about prayer and going up to see Jim. That's great stuff, man. That really is. But what would you say is working well in Texas? Where do you see some really cool things happening?
Some of the pockets of really the movements of God that we're seeing are in churches that are beginning intentional prayer gatherings in their church, whether it be in their Sunday morning a service, or it's a Tuesday night or a Wednesday night, but they're making prayer a foundational element of all they do. And we're seeing God do some unbelievable things. In fact, and this is a little bit larger church, I'll say that, but I'll read you a text I got just about 2 hours ago from a pastor who started a prayer service. And he said between June 1st and July 5th, 192 people have been saved.
Wow.
And those kind of stories are things we're seeing. It's not only large churches, we're seeing it in mid-sized churches and small churches that is a shifting, agent in the life of a church when people get praying. But also it's strategic thinking. It's realistic diagnosis in the life of a church. I know that you've helped churches do this so many times. Like, how did you get here? What are the factors that have led you here? And just be honest with yourself. You really can't begin to create the pathway forward until you honestly have an internal diagnosis of where you are. We just created something with the help of some consultants called Regenesis, which is a deep dive into church revitalization, but it's a deep dive into, okay, how did we get here? Now let's begin to talk through some vision frames for your church and some steps forward. And it's a pretty intensive, about 8 or 9 month process. I want to make sure I tell you, it's not a program, it's a process in which we invite pastors into cohorts with their leadership, by the way, into cohorts, whether that be lay people. And we say, look, this is not just for a pastor to go through to get buy-in. He has got to bring people alongside of him in the journey and the process of evaluating and then beginning to dream. So we're seeing some great momentum with that. We just launched it in a beta, and man, we've got a waiting list now. We anticipate, Mark, so we have about a little over 2,700 churches in our network here, right. And we're anticipating by the end of year 2025, we will have somewhere between 350 and 400 of our churches have gone through this process with us.
Awesome.
And I love smoking meats. It's my favorite hobby. I used to run. I don't run as much anymore. I need to run more than I ever have. I don't run as much as I ever have. And it's a love-hate relationship. I hate it the whole time I'm running, love it the moment I'm finished. So, but smoking meat, I love all through the process. And I've just learned, as you would know, slow. Yep. Hot and slow, man. Hot and slow.
Yeah, that's right.
Is a good way to do it. And that's how we're saying with churches, look, don't come in and think you're going to completely re-envision this thing in 3 months. You need to take the time and really deep dive and really understand what is the DNA of the church and where does it need to go as you love those people.
Man, I'm so grateful to hear you saying that from a state convention standpoint, understanding the time that it takes, the emphasis on prayer, the emphasis on cohorts. And you said you're kind of maxed out right now, but I know you're going to increase your capacity because it's going to work. And what works, you'll increase that capacity. So Obviously, if you're a Texas church, man, give them a call and they'd love to help you walk with you. You don't have to do this alone. You really can't do this alone. I mean, the Lord doesn't expect you to get in there and revitalize a church all by yourself, man. You got to shoulder up with some other men who will help you do that, walk with you and pray with you and give you some, man, you really have to do that. And so I know Nathan and his crew would love to do that. And that's what they get up every day.
And by the way, Mark, let me say this. It's not really our team leading those cohorts. We organize them, we facilitate them, but we believe peer on peer is one of the greatest forms of learning. And so we bring pastors on board to teach and lead those cohorts. We have some support systems with some of our staff, but we usually have a pastor or two leading those cohorts and leading through that process. And it's really good.
And that really helps with your scalability too, because as you get more people, more cohorts, more leaders, that's a great scalability. All right, we're going to take a quick turn right now on something else. Hey, we just got back as we're doing this not long ago from New Orleans. Been a lot of talk about women and their role in Baptist life. I was in a meeting in New Orleans. It was a meeting after the meeting, as they say, and several hundred people there. And the guy leading the meeting said, how many of you came to know Christ before the age of 15? Stand up. And a bunch of guys stood up. How many of you, your mother had a real significant role in you coming to know Christ before the age of 15? And almost all of them remained standing, and he said, women have such an important role in the lives of pastors and men. And he's absolutely right. But talk to us about, as you, as a state executive, largest convention, one of the largest conventions in our national convention, talk about some of the powerful ways women are impacting the kingdom where you see it in your convention, in your churches. And then secondly, what advice would you give to some young girls who feel called to missions and to service through the Southern Baptist Convention? What's a positive way
That's a great question in the sense of, women are so valuable, not only to ministry, but to the kingdom of God. We know this. And one of the things that I think we would find as one of the most significant ministries that God has used women in the lives of people are being, and I don't want to sound like a broken record here, but are prayer warriors. I mean, I would tell you, if you were to ask most people who prayed you to Jesus, it's going to be their grandmother or their mother and who is on their knees praying and crying out before God. And so, man, I think certainly as prayer warriors, but man, I think any young lady who is saying, God, what are you doing with my life? First of all, go in with open hands to say, God, use my life to the ends of the earth, if that's what you call me to be. And there are so many pathways to being used by God in the kingdom's purpose for ladies and their giftedness. Obviously, as Southern Baptists, we've always believed that scripture teaches that the office of pastor is for men, and that being historically, I think senior pastor has been our interpretation. I know we've had some shifts in these. I know in our convention, we had some shifts in this in November and in the SBC, but I don't think in any form or fashion. And I think anybody who read into this either wasn't in the room or maybe or misunderstanding. I don't think Southern Baptists would ever say women aren't useful in the kingdom and are not useful in ministry. That's crazy. There are so many gifted ladies who God has given a special gift for the kingdom. I think it's just saying, God, where are those pathways that best fit those gifts and skill sets? And what are the pathways that bring you the greatest honor in that young lady's life? And so I'm a part of a church plant in our city. And so, man, when I'm not preaching, I'm setting up chairs and taking down chairs. And my wife is serving as leading in the children's area right now till we can find that person. And we have four college interns right now, and five. And they came to my office a couple of weeks ago just to allow me a couple of hours to walk them through, what is the SBC? What is the SBTC? Why do you need to give your life to the kingdom through these organizations of partnership? And we have one young lady who's an intern. She's phenomenal. And she said, I'm about to finish my nursing degree.
Yeah.
I want to go to the nations. My heart's to be a missionary. And I was able to tell her about the IMB, able to tell her about the journeyman. And when she left, she went right back to our pastor and said, that's what I want to do.
There you go.
And so I saw her just a couple of nights ago, and we talked through the IMB process. And I was a trustee for IMB, talked through how she could go about becoming a journeyman and giving her life to someplace across the earth, ends of the earth, serve the nations. And so there are thousands of young ladies out there going, God, I just want to be used by you.
I would tell women to be
encouraged by the fact that it's God that places calling on their life, and to find those avenues where they feel like they can maximize their life for his glory.
And the Southern Baptist Convention is such a wonderful place for that. for women. There's so many opportunities, as you said, on the mission field and in local churches and all kinds of places that they have a huge impact. And I mean, all you got to do is say, I don't know, Lottie Moon and Annie Armstrong. I mean, I think they were pretty impactful in ministry. Yeah. And then you're not old enough, but man, I'm old enough to remember Bertha Smith.
Yeah, I know she is. Yeah.
Yeah, man. Bertha Smith, man, she could preach to those and speak the word and talk about what was going on in her life and prayer life. And man, those preachers would really be impacted by what she had to say. But she didn't see herself as a pastor or a preacher. She saw herself as a very unique woman who had a very unique gift, and she used it to the fullest. And she was very well embraced in Southern Baptist life. So I appreciate you saying that. I know that's true. I want everybody to know that our state leaders, our national leaders, have the highest degree of value in women in ministry. Absolutely. In terms of in Southern Baptist life. So many avenues for them to do that. But here's one other thing. Saw the other day that, you know, more and more our pastors are becoming older and older. And actually, pastors serving into their 70s is not unusual. Some even into their 80s. Part of that's because of hip replacements and good drug therapy.
Yeah.
but nonetheless, we got a lot of older guys. But we do have a shortage of younger men, especially those willing to go to struggling, dying churches. We have a hard enough time trying to, you know, find church planters, but also find young pastors. So talk to us a little bit about how we can increase the calling out the called of young men for ministry.
Yeah, well, we are. We're in a day where I think we're going to end up hitting a massive wave of pastors who retire and maybe not have the ability to help connect those churches, in particular, Mark, in those rural churches and those churches where there's not a lot of industry happening. I know even in our own convention, at any given time, we have close to 200 pastorless churches, a large majority of those being in less populated areas. And it's very, very difficult to have that connection ability to try to help connect the church to a pastor in a place where there's no industry, and it's very difficult to do. And so we're going to be coming up on a massive challenge. Fortunately, in Texas, here at the SBTC, we have a young pastors network. In fact, I need Mark to get you down to speak to these guys. It's led by Spencer Plumley. He's one of our consultants leading that, doing a phenomenal job. And we have a network of somewhere between 300 and 400 young pastors under 40. They keep saying, what's the age? I just turned 42. So I say, well, it's 42. And every year I get older, that it'll increase. So one day the whole convention will be young, but young pastors network. But we do things with these guys under Spencer's leadership that, like, for example, there's cohorts. They're cohort driven again. And our leadership team, we do things like take them to the IMB, to the executive committee. And we spend a day or two with them there, helping them understand, again, why are we Southern Baptist, and what is the beauty about being a part of such a national network? Yes, has challenges. Yes, has Twitter conversations.
But if we keep it focused, and soon to be thread conversations.
Yeah, no joke. And you know, if we keep it focused, then we'll stay on task on the mission. But to answer your question on calling out the called, interesting enough, and it might even date me a little bit, but when I kind of started in ministry, the natural progression to being a pastor, no matter where it was, at school, you were a youth minister,
yeah,
maybe an associate pastor, but usually a youth minister. And then I jumped, you know, from youth minister to pastor. And there was this kind of progression. And somewhere a couple of decades ago now or so, maybe a little before that, it kind of shifted to, I'm going to go plant a church, or, well, mate, you know, I can't tell you how many pastors I've talked to who've never pastored before say, well, you know, what I really like is starting a church about 600 or 700. I'm going, man, that's okay. I mean, a lot of people would. And if you can, praise God for you. That's just not normal. It's not the normal progression. But so I think we have a lot of guys that maybe have some expectations. I don't want to say entitlement, because I think you just don't know what you don't know, but some expectations to start at a place. My philosophy is different. I started pastoring 2 months after I turned 24, and 33 people. And I did that because I wanted to make my mistakes early, in a sense. And I wanted to be able to, I tell people, I wanted to be able to take advantage of the fact that these people saw me more as their grandson, as their pastor, and kind of walk through that. But I encourage every guy that wants to be a pastor, I encourage them, man, find anywhere that'll let you go to them. I mean, that was my key. Anybody at 24 that let me be a pastor, I'll go. Yep.
That's right.
I didn't care where it was. I didn't care what the compensation was. I'd figure all that out. I just wanted to pastor people, shepherd people. And so as we think about this next generation, man, And I think you've done, let me just say this, and I would say this to anybody. I think you've done a phenomenal job at making revitalization, and now the terminology we're using a lot more, replanting, attractive to these guys. And in fact, I think we're I think we see a shift from guys who go, hey, yeah, I'd love to go plant a church, but man, I also would love to go to somewhere that has a foundation and has some people there, some core group people, help replant it or revitalize it. And man, go from there. And I think there's some guys drawn to that. And that's because of voices like you and Mark Halleck and a few others out there who've just been really given that call. And I think that's a bright future for us, Mark. I hope we continue to do that with the same intensity, if not more.
Well, I intend to, as long as I have breath. You're right, Nathan. That was my real passion, was to change the narrative so that dying churches were not something to run from, but something to run to, and an opportunity to display the grace of God. And frankly, maybe even a bigger challenge than church planting in some ways. And you know, if you couch it in the right way, young men want to be challenged. That's what they want in life, is to be challenged. And so it is a challenge and it is hard, but it is amazingly glorifying to God and edifying to the replanter as he does it. Hey, let's talk real quick about the North American Mission Board. Sure. Because you have a good relationship with SEND. Just kind of unpack that a little bit. And by the way, as guys are listening to this, both in the Southern Baptist Convention and not in the Southern Baptist Convention, and Nathan is not a loner in this. I mean, all of our state executives have the same heart that he has. They have plans for prayer, plans for raising up the next generation, plans to engage women in all kinds of viable ministries. They have plans for revitalization and church planting. I mean, dude, I work with a lot of denominations across North America. Nobody has the kind of leadership in state conventions that we're blessed to have. And Nathan's the top of that, but he's not alone. And so it's a great, great number of guys who love you and love the local church. And it's a real blessing. And it's one of the greatest strengths we have. But talk a little bit about your relationship with NAM and how that works where you are in Texas.
Yeah, so I've always had a great relationship with NAM. And Kevin Ezell's been a great blessing to me. In a sense of friendship, and also helping me think strategically about how to plant more churches. So when I went to Colorado, we enhanced that relationship in Colorado and saw some good movement. And
yeah, let me just interrupt you there, because you won't. Sure. It's to glorify God in this. But talk a little bit about the impact that took place while you were in Colorado. Just go ahead and share those with us. I think it'll be encouraging to guys, because Colorado is not an Old South state.
Yeah,
it's a highly resistant state to the gospel for a lot of reasons. But yet, talk a little bit about what happened while you were there.
Yeah. So, I mean, we loved our time in Colorado. I will say this. It was a little cold for me, but we loved our time in Colorado. There's a lot of a freedom of guys wanting to connect and desire to network together. And so just tried to get out and build relationships. We wanted to really, 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 you know, they were already doing some great church planting there. I don't take anything away from them, but from the state convention side, the state convention had kind of been checked out a little bit relationally and wasn't really engaged. And so I went to Dave Howeth, who's there and has done a phenomenal job, and just said, man, I'm not that kind of guy. I'm very relational. I want to be at those things. You don't need to blow the Colorado Baptist trumpet when I'm there, but I just want to be at those things, get to know these guys. And I want those planters to know, man, I am in your corner and I believe in you and I believe in what you're doing. And, you know, one day, Mark, maybe on another one of these, I'll share the story. You know, I moved right when I got out of college, I moved to Tennessee to plant a church, and it was it wasn't a failure because I learned some things from it, but it was certainly a challenging time. It's a pretty fascinating story. I learned that I didn't move there to plant a church. I moved there for God to plant some things in me. Wow. And so fast forward back again to Colorado to say, I wanted these guys to know, if they're walking through those hard times like I did, and they feel like they're not gaining any traction, or if they're walking through family circumstances, like, man, you got a friend here. And so we just really dove in and tried to build relationships across the state. We cast a new vision for the state about really helping every church take their next step to kingdom advancement, and worked closely with those churches to help them develop that strategy. And, you know, God bless. Here's the deal, Mark. I'll tell you this, man. Anything good that I've been allowed to be a part of is totally God's grace on somebody who's so undeserving of that. You know, just want God to move among us. And, you know, by God's grace, when we got there, there was just a hunger for that networking. And so we just really kind of tightened the ability to relationally network and get out with these guys. And yeah, God bless. We saw the convention grow. We saw baptisms really exploded while we were there, you know, as far as the churches reporting those and the churches seeing people saved. And then we got to be around people that were great. Like I said, Mark Halleck there for a time. Ben Mandrell was there. Before I left, we were part of Storyline before I left. I was on the search team, brought JT English to Storyline, and it's just going phenomenal. There's just a lot of great pastors, great leaders there, from the young generation to kind of that middle generation of guys like Mike Rout, Calvin Whitman, Bob Bender, some of those guys who really just bought into what we were doing. And so by God's grace, he just blessed it, man. And it was
a great story. And, you know, in our world, we often don't hear all the good news. And man, what happened in Colorado when you were there in terms of the increase in baptism, increase in church planting, rapid and dramatic increase at a time when it was really hard in a lot of other places. It's just a great story. And anybody who gives the Quadrant Program, anybody who's a Southern Baptist, it's their story. You know, they're part of that work in That's Colorado right. through NAM and through others. And so grateful for what you did there, but also grateful that you're in Texas. And so now that we're in Texas,
yeah,
I got to ask, I do, you know, man, we've got some dear friends at Southwestern Baptist Theological Seminary. Some of our closest friends are there. Some of the guys that work with us in revitalization that we take with us on conferences, and it's been a rough go there. And you're right there. Give me your thoughts on that and how we can pray for them and just some of your thoughts as the exec there about Southwestern.
Sure. I'll come right back to that. I did want to finish. You asked about NAM. So when I came to Texas, started Send Network SBTC.
Yeah.
Get this, Mark. In the first year, we more than doubled our church plants from the previous year. We are on track to not nearly double that, but grow that by about 20-25% this year. And so it's been a phenomenal partnership. We're seeing ethnic church plants like crazy, and God's been really good. So great relationship with NAM, Sin Network, and I believe it's the greatest network of planting churches, revitalizing churches, replanting, because of the coaching, the care, the assessment, the you know, God providing. So I'm a big fan of that. Now back to Southwestern.
Well, wait a minute. I'm sure if Izell's listening to this, he goes, Clifton, let him talk, man. Let him talk.
Yeah.
Don't move to another subject. Let him talk.
Well, let me say this. I love Kevin Izell, but let me say this. There is a team of incredible guys out there that work for North American Mission Board. And I get texts from them all the time saying, don't want anything, just want to check on you. How can we be better partners? NAM is full of incredible people. And I know you hear stories out there, but listen to me. I'm just sharing with you my experience of years and years and years working with them. I believe we can do more together in planting and replanting with them than we can by ourselves. I think our statistics would show that. And so I'm very, very, very excited to be in that partnership and very grateful for the investment that Southern Baptists are making in Texas. Because for a long time, people say, well, Texas is the Bible Belt.
Yeah.
But let me give you one example of this. I'm going to share this with our convention in November as we unroll some new vision. In 1998, when the SBTC was formed, there were 19 million people in Texas. Today, 25 years later, we're about to celebrate our 25th year. 25 years later, there's over 30 million, and the estimation is that there's 19 to 20 million lost people in Texas.
Yeah.
So in a period of 25 years, there's now more lost people in Texas than there were people in Texas in 25 years.
Yeah.
And God's bringing the world here. We've got to plant more churches. We've got to help these dying churches. So, man, that's what I get up every morning, excited to go, how can we help advance the kingdom, be behind pastors, help resource and network them? And it's really a joy to do that.
All right. Hey, Hurst, you're an old radio guy.
Yeah.
Flag the tape on that, and we'll go back and Hurst is not only an old radio. We'll flag the tape and go back and play this part for Kevin and for everybody else. Thank you for all those good things about NAM.
Sure.
Also, Dan was his mom and dad were missionaries. Talk a little bit about that, Dan, real quick, since Nathan was a trustee. Talk about your experience with mom and dad.
You know what? Let me take it one step back from that, because mom and dad went to Southwest. And but I was adopted in Texas. And I grew up in Honduras. They went to the mission field when I was 10 months old. And so I never knew anything else. You know, just I thought everybody's parents were missionaries, you know, and that's what you did. And so but just a few years ago, my kids wanted to find out about my birth parents and where I came from. They wanted to find out if they too were going to go crazy when they got old. And so they did the search, they did the DNA thing, and they actually found my family. Now my birth mother and birth father have passed on, but they found my family. And as we discovered what was going on in that family, it just hit me like a ton of bricks how God rescued me, you know, through this adoption. He intervened and took me out of a horrible situation there in Texas, and raised me in a loving family, a missionary family who was so passionate about the gospel and passionate about their family. And I never knew anything else. And I look back on that and I realize I was gifted. You know, I mean, it was just a blessing from God that I got to do that. But, you know, a lot of missionary kids feel that way too. You know, they look at their experience and see what has going on in the States, and they realize they caught a blessing that most kids don't get. But IMB, of course, back then it was the Foreign Mission Board. But that was our life, you know, that, and I'm so grateful that the cooperative program made it possible for our missionaries to go and not worry about the finances, and they got the training that they needed and the support that they needed. And the IMB has been historically a powerful tool, I think, in God's hands for reaching the world. So thank you for your work with the IMB and helping to make that possible.
You know, I never like to let him talk, Nathan, because I always sound like a cartoon character.
He's got a voice for radio.
He's got a voice for radio. They say I have a face for AM is what they say. But let's talk real quick about Southwestern, since it's there. How can we pray for them? What do you see happening there? Just give us a word about that.
Yeah, so I'm actually encouraged. I think we have the right leadership in place. I know that it seems like there's challenge after challenge after challenge, but you know, the last few years there have statistically been challenging, and I think now we have the right leadership in place, and I think Dr. David Dockery is a phenomenal leader. In fact, I will say this: I've heard it said multiple times that. From some guys I highly respect, that he's one of the greatest leaders they've ever seen. And so I'm really grateful for his leadership there. I think he has the right temperament. I think he has the right spirit and the right heart. And I think that he is going to lead Southwestern back to some great days. O.S. Hawkins being there with him, phenomenal help in that manner. And so I'm encouraged, guys. You know, Twitter is just, it's so full of half information, yep. half accuracies that, yep. that oftentimes we just don't know what to believe. And the calls that I get, people have often read on Twitter, but I'm encouraged. And I tell you what, you know, now in their college, I don't know if you knew this, you can go, if you're coming out of high school and you feel called to ministry, you go to their college and you can get a degree. Bachelor's and an MDiv in 5 years total. I said, that's not even fair, man. That's not even fair, but it's phenomenal. Not that's fair, great. But phenomenal that this generation can do that. And so I'm pro Southwestern. I think they're in a good place. They have certainly some challenges ahead of time, but here's the way I'll put it. And this really goes across the board of the SBC because I've gotten a lot of phone calls afterwards about, hey, what are your thoughts? And you know, where do we go from here? And you know, and I think the SBC, look, if you just looked around over the last 2 to 3 years, 5 years ago, we were having 4,000 people there, 5,000 people, and people were saying, well, the SBC is dying.
Right.
Today, I couldn't even get a seat in the hall.
Right.
And I don't think we're dying. I think we're just evolving into, okay, where do we want to go in the future?
You know, I agree.
And so I'm actually incredibly encouraged at the SBC level. We do have some things to work through and work out, but I think the way we do it is get together face to face and heart to heart and say, let's move forward. But my son, I have four kids. My middle son, you'll like this, Mark. He's 15. He's about 6 foot, 200 pounds. He's ripped. He's like Opie on steroids.
Yeah.
Big time football player, huge rugby player. In fact, he leaves next week. He got picked on a national team to go play in Ireland, rugby. So he's going to be leaving here in about a week and a half to go to Ireland. He called me from rugby tournament he was at, and they had lost a game, and man, he just was going off. I can't believe this. And so did this. And he, you know, he fumbled the ball and he missed a tackle and I couldn't do this. And I just listened to him for a moment. And I said, his name's Carter. I said, Carter, I said, I understand you're frustrated. I understand that things didn't go the way you wanted. I understand there's a lot of complexities to how that game played out. I said, let me teach you a lesson here. There's lessons to be learned. He said, well, Dad, what lesson to be learned? I said, buddy, here's a lesson. Leaders don't react. Leaders respond. I said, reaction is based off emotion. So right now, the way you're talking, the way you're emotionally charged, the way you're pointing out everybody else's deficiencies, that's a reaction. And the leaders don't react, because here's the deal. If reaction is based off of emotion and circumstance, that is a constant reaction, and it's constantly drawing reaction out of you. Leaders based by responding. And I said, so here's what you do, son. Tomorrow you get up, you go lead your team to victory, and you tell them you got their back. You tell them you're going to be there on you know, cheering them on. You're going to be there on the field with them, and you go help lead your team to victory. And that's how you respond. And so when it comes to this, to the SBC, when it comes to even Southwestern, there can be a lot of things out there we can react to, but the better pathway, I think, is let's respond. Let's show them that Southwestern could be incredibly successful in the future in training up seminary students to go take the gospel to the nations. Let's show them. I just wrote the same article in our newspapers. It's kind of hard, but I said, look, you know, hey, SBTC, there's a lot we can react to on Twitter. There's a lot, but let's not react. Let's respond by planting more churches than we've ever planted. You know, by being praying churches and cultivating and leading the way in prayer, by seeing evangelism become a priority again, by making disciple-making pathways, helping send churches, partnerships, et cetera. I just want to lead a movement of responding, not reacting.
Amen. And you know, we talk all the time about God doing some great work in dying churches and struggling churches, some of his best work. You know, I'm a Midwestern graduate. My dad was a Midwestern graduate. Man, I tell you what, before Jason came, there were people talking about closing Midwestern. Seriously. I mean, it was on the books to close it. And it was a mess when he got there. But my goodness, look what 10 years has done. And look at the turnaround in that place. And that can happen at Southwestern. And Southern Baptist, we need that to happen. I mean, we got to root for it, pray for it. We need it. Just as Nathan said, the number of lost people that moved to Texas, man, there's so much we could do there. And we will do there. And God will do there. So, Nathan, I'm glad you're there. I love your heart and your attitude. You're an encouragement to me. You've been an encouragement on this. Now, we end this with the final four last questions, all right? Real easy ones. If you answer correctly some of these, you get a prize.
All right.
Big 12 or SEC?
SEC. I'm born and raised in Louisiana, man. SEC. But let me say this.
Hey, well, he just lost the prize.
Well, let me say this. Actually, this year, I'm now a Conference USA because my oldest son is going to be a kicker at Sam Houston State.
There you go.
Okay. USA guy.
All right. We'll lever that. How about, I think I know where you're going with this. I know what you'll say, but I don't know what you really believe. Denver Nuggets or Dallas Mavericks?
Oh, man. I've got to pull for the Mavericks. The Nuggets just won it all. I've got to pull for the Mavericks.
All right.
I think, their owner is a little out there, but it's a great environment to go be at.
But it was great watching the Nuggets, wasn't it? Wasn't that great?
Man, yeah. I wish I'd lived in Denver, you know, when they won it.
Yeah. All right. Here's another one. Texas barbecue or Tex-Mex?
Oh, Mark, you're talking to a guy that until last week had 5 smokers. I sold some of them. I put a new smoker last night. So I'm a massive meat smoker. So I've got to go Texas barbecue.
And this last one, Southern Gospel or Bluegrass? Hello.
Well, I'm more of just a country music fan, but I would have to say Southern Gospel for me. I'm not growing up around bluegrass.
Yeah. Well, you get the consolation prize.
Yeah.
Which is a package of various motel soaps that I've
collected. There you go. That's right. I love it.
So I'll mail it to you. Hey, thank you for being with us. Appreciate you. Love you very much. And man, we'll have you back sometime. And everybody, hey, go to Texas, go to Southwestern, hook up with Nathan and his crew on revitalization. Revitalize a church in Texas that's got a lot of lost people moving there, and do it all for God's glory. Take us home,
guys.
Thank you so much, Nathan, for spending time with us. It's been so encouraging and motivating, and we appreciate your time and appreciate your passion for the ministry. And for those of you who listen, thank you for listening. I hope you've subscribed. If you listen on a format that allows you to do that, that helps us get the word out about the program, and we appreciate your help in doing that. And we'll see you on the next episode, and thank you so much.
Thanks for joining us today on Revitalize and Replant. This podcast is brought to you by the North American Mission Board, where we help dying or struggling churches regain health for the glory of God and the good of their communities. If you found this conversation helpful, don't forget to subscribe to the podcast on your favorite platform. To learn more about becoming a replanting pastor or to explore resources about revitalization for your own church, visit churchreplanters.com.